This episode of Strange Harbor originally aired in December of 2017.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. It's a UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Shope went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I'm taking a random picture, zoomed in, and there was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unique, the unqualified, the unknown, the weird and the wonderful.
It's the first discovery of its kind in centuries. Scientists have just detected a new mysterious void inside the Great Pyramid of Giza. Now, a cascade of questions. How did the Egyptians use this space, and did they leave anything behind? Archaeologists began their mission to map the pyramid's interior here. They used a type of cosmic ray called muons to scan the pyramid's inner structures. It's similar to the way a doctor would use x-rays to see a broken bone. The Great Pyramid, 4,500 years old, a tomb for the pharaoh Khufu. Ancient architects went to incredible lengths to protect the remains of the pharaoh, concealing his tomb at the end of a labyrinth of long, narrow chambers. Muons traveled upwards through these limestone walls. In open cavities like this one, the particles behave differently, a clue for scientists. This massive corridor is called the Great Gallery. It's almost 30 feet high and longer than a football field. Visitors hike up these ramps to access the pharaoh's chamber. But it's above these vaulted ceilings that researchers detected something new. Experts caution against guessing at the void's purpose. It's highly unlikely there are any artifacts or tombs hidden there. The space could be a structural device, a way to relieve pressure on the outer walls. And don't hold your breath for answers either. Egyptian authorities say tunneling to the newly discovered area is out of the question. Here we are, the pyramid's crown jewel, the king's chamber. The sarcophagus in front of you was the last resting place of the pharaoh Khufu. But modern archaeologists have never seen his body. It was gone, and the room empty when it was rediscovered in the 1800s. The new void in this pyramid is yet another mystery contained in these limestone blocks. Who knows when we might decode its meaning? I'm Ben Wiedemann, and this is CNN in virtual reality.
So, the great void in the Great Pyramid mystery.
What do you think it is?
Gosh, I don't know. And you notice how... well. I have a couple questions first about I have this fascination with the Egyptian, ancient Egypt and the pyramids and hieroglyphs and all that old Egypt stuff.
Like that stuff
I just have this weird fascination with it. Now, who is speaking for the mummies? We are digging and desecrating their burials for our amusement and our quote unquote knowledge. It would be just like me going to dig up your grandpa just because I want to.
Because I want to know how he died.
Yeah.
Maybe how he lived.
Aren't we crossing some kind of line by digging up these graves and tombs and taking these mummies and putting them on display in museums?
You would think so. I mean, I think that you're right. You know, it does. We're desecrating the burial place. This is a sacred place, spiritual place, and we're just going in and tearing it up for our own knowledge. But
it's pretty selfish.
It is. It is. On the other hand, it's really the only way to learn about these ancient cultures. You know, we want to know about these people. We want to learn about them. And we have these forensic psychologists or scientists that go in and look at all of this stuff and come to some conclusion about how these people lived and what life was like in their time and what their purpose was in that area. I mean, there's a lot of things that they can find out. Also, they can find out a lot about how we as human beings have evolved. On one hand, it's a desecration of the burial place. On the other hand, it's a scientific exploration. I think you have to weigh the scientific value versus the value of desecrating their burial places.
Well, I think then I could go dig up your great-great-grandfather because it's in the name of science and I want to learn about things and it should be okay.
You just want to steal his gold teeth.
Well, that too. But still. So, okay.
And that's, I think that's the thing too, is there's, you know, there's some wealth to be acquired here when they dig up these tombs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been raiding these tombs for years and years and years. Hundreds of years. And, you know, that's the other thing, is what's acceptable as far as removing things from the tomb. It's one thing to go in and look at it, to study it, but when we start taking things out and divvying up the loot, where do we cross the line with that?
Now, this void, we may never know what's there.
Yeah. And it could be a functional void. In other words, it may serve some purpose just to be an empty space, or it may be that it's a storage space of some type, where, you know, jewels or valuable things or even oils or food or tobacco.
UFOs.
UFOs. There might be radio equipment that sends messages to faraway planets. Yes. So... yeah, there's that stuff in there. You know, we don't know. We don't know enough about these pyramids, about how they were built, why they were built, other than to be a monument to, you know, the bodies that were buried there. But you would think that they would mean so much more because they're just so massive. You know, obviously would have taken a tremendous amount of engineering to build. We have these giant pyramids and understanding the why, about why they're there and how they were built and what their purpose was. We've never truly answered that question, and maybe there's something in that void that might do that. One would hope. On the other hand, you know, you bring up a good point about desecrating the burial place.
If the pyramids were intended as that, for that,
right.
I mean, I assume that there's some kind of writings that say these pyramids, you know, not just because there's one body in this pyramid doesn't mean they were built to be a burial place for that king, that pharaoh.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, that's the idea that we have.
Is that just a theory?
That these were built to honor those kings and leaders that existed during that time, that lived during that time.
Because all the other pharaohs were buried in the Valley of the Kings.
Right. But these people must have been special.
Huh. I think that's where the whole hypothesis of these aren't tombs, they served as something else, whether it was, you know, central government or whatever.
Right. Or maybe even some communication with the heavens. I mean, there's some evidence that there's that you can navigate by aligning the stars with the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at a loss because there could be something extraterrestrial here. There could be some information about extraterrestrial beings, or it could just be coincidence that these things line up like that.
Just their alignment is 1/15th of a degree to true north. How good do you have to be to do that, especially
sure.
with something that big?
Yeah, that's quite a feat of engineering to do that.
We can't do that now, can we?
We probably can, but it would take a lot of work and computers and modern technology. Considering they didn't really have computers back then. They didn't have the equipment to actually mechanically build a pyramid. We can build one with equipment that we have, cranes and heavy equipment, heavy machinery, but certainly they didn't have that when those pyramids were built. So how did they build them? How did they cut the stone? How did they lay the stone? How did they get the top stones on? You know, you could figure out that they could probably lay a foundation and maybe even a couple of layers of stone. But these stones are cut to fit almost perfectly. You know, they're stacked. I don't know how tall they are, but they're fairly tall. So that didn't just happen overnight.
I think that the stations should send us to Egypt to do a show.
Explore this, yeah.
Yeah, and
we could do a show right on site at the pyramids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it.
I understand they put on quite a show these days. It's quite
the tourist trap.
Yeah.
See, and I don't really want the tourist thing. I want the behind the scenes. I want the nitty gritty. I want to lay in one of those coffins, take a nap.
We commercialize things and we
ruin them.
We ruin them. Yeah. You know, when we try to create a show out of everything, we try to make it glitz and glamour and something special, and we use lights and electronic technology to sell things and mm-hmm. to sell these ideas and to make it more dramatic and exciting. But I think you're right. I think it is more dramatic just in its original state.
Yeah.
I would certainly rather see it that way. You know, I'd like to know. I would like to just be close to one of those mummies. I think the energy, I'm an energy person, so I think the energy that would exist in there would be tremendous. And if you had the ability to attach some of that energy to yourself and to communicate within that energy, I think you could learn a lot. Maybe they're sending the wrong people into these places. Maybe they need to send people that can, you know, communicate on a different level.
Well, you know, the director of Egyptian Antiquities, I don't know if I trust that guy. You know, you've seen him on TV all the time on any of those
right.
ancient Egypt shows. He's the guy that gets, you know, is the overseer of all the stuff.
Right. Right.
And decides what you can see and what you can't see, and you know, he's forgotten more stuff that, you know, they have, that they've discovered and filed away in some closet.
Well, sure, and there's, just like everything else, there's secrets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's what the public gets to hear, and then there's what the scientists get to hear and see. And it's different. You know, you've been behind the scenes at different events and things.
Mm-hmm.
It's always different
yeah.
than when you're sitting in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
What you see backstage, what you see behind the scenes, actually kind of coarse and crude
mm-hmm.
compared to what you see from the other side, sitting in an audience watching. So, you know, this is the way with most industry. What people see from the outside isn't necessarily exactly what it is on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And they put on a show. You know, even in government service. I mean, I worked for VA hospital for 20 years. What we show, you know, as far as show on the outside isn't necessarily what goes on in the day-to-day workings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the development of things and the way things that change and grow. We buried a time capsule out at the VA hospital. This was back, I believe it was in the, it might have been in the late 80s, maybe the early 90s. I'm not sure exactly when. But it's supposed to be opened after 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just some things mostly that the Vietnam vets put in there. And it was to kind of share some of their stories and what happened with them so that people in the future, when they dig that up, you know, or if people forget about it and it gets dug up, you know, 200 or 300 years from now,
mm-hmm.
people will have some sense of what went on at that time in that place. So could be that these pyramids are similar to that. They're mm-hmm. like time capsules. They buried all this stuff there and they put these hieroglyphics there as a way of communicating in the future so that people would come in and they would see this and they would know how they lived. They would know what went on at this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have television and film. I mean, there weren't, you know, back when the Egyptians built the pyramids, they didn't have a way to record things the way that we do. I mean, we can record history, we can record day-to-day things, and back then, there was no way to do that. I mean, they had to chisel it in stone.
Yeah.
You know, they did have paper, but it required a tremendous effort to make a sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So only the very, very, very wealthiest had paper. And they may not have even been able to read or write. Reading and writing was not necessarily something that the very wealthy could do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would hope that they could, but they ascended to power because of their family ties, mostly,
mm-hmm.
and not because of their skill or education or knowledge, but simply by being related to the person who was in power prior to them. So, very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at these pyramids. And, you know, my sense of curiosity makes me want to know what's in that void in those pyramids.
Yeah.
But, you know, we may never know, at least not in this time. So we just have to accept that it's there and draw our own conclusions, I guess.
I do not want to accept it.
Why not?
I don't know. I think that... Oh!
What?
We have documentation like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Bible, things that were like found in caves, right?
Yeah.
And that mention Egypt and the pyramids.
I don't know if those things do. I don't know that the Bible does. It may. Of course, we don't know. You know, the Bible was written approximately 300 years after the death of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not necessarily written in Christ's hand, as people sometimes think.
Mm-hmm.
But it was stories that were passed along. And eventually, about 300 years after Christ died, they began to compile some of this information and put it together in a form that could be passed on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was written in a very obscure language, the language of Aramaic. And then, of course, it had to be translated. And that Bible was translated hundreds, if not thousands, of times. We currently have over 3,000 versions of the Bible. And they say a variety of different things. So how do we know that the word that we have today is actually a good representation of what went on back then. You know, it's like, tell somebody a secret, and by the time you, you know, it gets told two or three times, it's been exaggerated and stretched, and, you know, you could say, I fell down and skinned my knee, and by the time the 10th person hears it, you've had your leg amputated, and, you know, you're in a wheelchair. And so, we have a funny way of passing on language because it's not always accurate. Now, we have ways today because we have recordings, just like this show. It's recorded so that we can go back and we can look at it. And we can know that that's exactly what was said because that's what's on the recording.
Mm-hmm.
We have political things, you know, like our city councils and different political meetings are recorded, video and audio recorded, so that we have a record of that. And those are pretty accurate records because you can go back and look and see those records and know that they are exact representations of what went on.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what was said because it's recorded live. I record all the city council meetings for Ocean Shores. And I have a policy. Whatever is recorded on the, we record it to a DVD. Whatever is recorded on that DVD doesn't get edited or modified in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a mistake or somebody says something out of line, it stays there.
That's,
it's a permanent record. And we try to keep it as accurate as we possibly can so that when that, you know, if that's ever needed, and we have had to produce these videos for court and for other reasons, but when it's needed, people can then look at it and have an accurate representation of what happened. 1,000 years ago, that didn't exist. That technology didn't exist. There was no way to get an accurate representation. Even as early as a few hundred years ago, there wasn't a whole lot of documentation. There was more. I mean, once we had the printing press, we certainly had better documentation. But prior to that, prior to the Industrial Revolution, basically information was passed by word of mouth. And we told stories and we shared information one person to the next.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird and the weird stuff we're talking about right now, the void, the mysterious void discovered in the Pyramid of Giza, and how we'll probably never know.
Somebody called me a geezer the other day.
No, geezer.
Oh.
More Strange Harbor coming up.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
This episode of Strange Harbor originally aired in December of 2017.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
And it's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. And what do you want to talk about now?
I want to talk about some weird stuff.
Okay.
So what kind of weird stuff you got going?
UFO sightings, according to UFOs Northwest and our good buddy, Bill Puckett.
Mr. Puckett, he's on it.
He is on it like Blue Bonnet.
He is. He's always so accurate in his research.
This was November 26th, 10:30 p.m., Bremerton, Washington. I saw a white light south of my house looking southwest of the trees. It moved very quickly within the tree lines and then stopped, shined a V-shaped white light onto the top of a very tall pine tree near the top of approximately 5 seconds and then disappeared. Months earlier, I saw a white orb within 50 yards from me in a grass field. I spied upon it, and it flashed 3 times. I did not flash back with my flashlight. It then disappeared thereafter. I live near a military base. I believe these are USA's secret stuff.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about that one?
Well, you know, I just watched the, it was on the Science Channel or one of those, a thing about Area 51. Recently, a lot of the documents from Area 51 have been declassified. We now know that area was being used as a testing ground for some very unique aircraft. But the aircraft weren't built there. They were built other places like Lockheed and Boeing and such. But I thought it was very interesting that a lot of the things that we had thought were going on there were actually going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Now they kind of skirted over any UFO kind of talk. But obviously there was a lot going on in Area 51. And I think there's a lot going on sometimes at some of our military bases where they're testing new equipment and testing new vehicles and planes. I mean, they have to be tested somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're going to be tested on government installations.
And they can't say, okay, we're going to be testing this new top secret vehicle that we're flying and testing, and it'll be over the Burger King in Bremerton tomorrow night, so don't be alarmed.
Yeah, they're not going to tell you that. Well, that was the whole thing about this Area 51 thing, that they basically were keeping everything quiet and had sworn everybody to secrecy and, you know, were not even letting people leave there. I mean, they had to come basically live there.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't come with their families. They had to come individually and work on these projects. I guess they could go home every once in a while, but swear on their life that they wouldn't talk about it.
They had to keep their trap shut.
Yeah. And there are people that can do that. But I thought it was very interesting that all this has been going on out there, which we thought had been going on, and all this testing. And they talked a lot about the tests, like the A-112 or whatever it was, the stealth.
No, the stealth bomber?
Stealth bomber, and how that was tested, and how they used the radar waves. They would put this thing up on a pole and then use radar to try to detect it. It was quite interesting, and that they used different materials to try to break up the radar or reflect the radar. And, you know, some of these events, what we might call UFO events, probably are going on at other military bases. Now, we have two big military bases not far from us in Tacoma. And I've seen all kinds of strange things out there. I was driving home one night very late. It was probably 3 o'clock in the morning. And I saw this ball of light that had like sparks flying off it. And it was shooting straight up in the air. And all these sparks were flying off, and it was kind of going up very erratically. It wasn't going in a straight line. It was like it was spinning and spiraling, and it was actually kind of frightening to see it.
Yeah?
And I couldn't figure out what it was. I looked in the papers the next day. There wasn't a single word about it. And I worked over there sometimes in the hospital at Fort Lewis, and so I asked some folks over there that I knew, and they knew nothing about it. Nobody could say anything about what this was. And about 2 weeks later, again, I was on my way home early in the morning. I'd been out
partying,
and I don't remember why I was out at that hour of the morning, but I was. And I saw one of the stealth planes.
The stealth bomber?
As it flew right over me. It scared the heck out of me.
Ooh.
Yeah, it just flew right over the top of me, and I was right out near the end of the airstrip obviously was landing. I was on the freeway that runs by the end of the airstrip. But it came over so quietly.
Yeah.
And it was big. It was like in the movies, you know, when the big UFO kind of comes over the city and casts a shadow on everything.
Really?
It was like this big black cloud that came right over the top of me.
Wow.
So that was interesting.
I wonder, the people that get to fly those, that's got to be pretty fun. Like, I get to fly a bomb, you know, a stealth bomber.
And these test pilots that test these new things, you know, I mean, they got to have some serious guts to go out
some
there.
Some cojones?
Yeah. Fly something that's never flown before.
Yeah.
And is a, you know, completely unique and different design from what we see as functional aircraft. So, and there's talk about Area 51. Maybe they built some flying saucers there. That really wasn't in the documentary. I think it got mentioned briefly. But there's been talk about the military building flying saucers and flying discs of some type. But I've never seen one. Have you ever seen anything like that?
A flying disc?
Yeah.
No.
I haven't either. But we've talked to people that have.
Oh, yeah, plenty.
And there are lots of recorded incidents of people seeing flying discs.
Our next report, speaking of disc-shaped objects, Lacey, Washington, not too far from here. A silver disc-shaped object slowly ascends, vanishes. I left home near the Thurston County Fairgrounds, heading west, blah, blah. I reached here, blah, blah. Turned, noticed a bright silver object in the northwest sky about 30 degrees above the horizon. I'm guessing the object was 15,000 feet in elevation. It was a bright, sunny morning, no clouds. Visibility was 25 miles, give or take. The object looked to be sized between a jet airliner and a four-seat Cessna aircraft, but it was hard to judge from the distance, which seemed about 15 miles away. The object was closer to jet airliner size and wasn't moving much at first. I would have seen flashing FAA lights because of how clear the sky was and my clear view of it. It was shaped like an oblong, but typical disc shape, almost cigar, but not with a slight blackness spot underneath. It didn't appear to be moving much as I drove along at 35 until I rounded the 90-degree corner and headed south, got to the other 90-degree turn that heads west again. It seemed like to just get smaller and appeared to be heading straight up in elevation. I got to the light at Pacific Avenue, continued west through the light, went another three-quarter miles through trees with no visibility, and then got to the 500 block of Carpenter within a minute or two where I had an even clearer view of the west to south sky, and the object was gone. I scanned the sky in the direction where the object should have been if it was an aircraft traveling at under 500 miles an hour. I saw nothing but blue sky in every direction.
Pretty compelling,
yeah,
don't you think?
Seattle, Washington, large, rich, orange orb flies forward and fades. Bus stop, 7-Eleven, Martin Luther King Jr., know the area well. Large orb, light, rich, orange color. I didn't hear anything coming from the sighting. It was further over an apartment complex direction and faded forward, heading in a skyway direction and faded. Just faded. I think there were heavy clouds in the area. I think maybe that's why it seemed to fade very quickly. It was moving like a blimp, but it wasn't as large as a blimp. It was about the size of a small airplane carrying two passengers. All I know, it was orb-shaped with lighter hues in the middle, and the outer sides were a rich, lighter orange. It was like clouds at night that's showing it's about to rain.
What do you think of that? I mean, that's interesting stuff.
Now, are those orbs the same kind of orbs that people see in the woods, you know, ground level? Often Sasquatch sighting orbs?
I think they're different. You know, I'm not sure. I know that the only orbs I've ever seen were, they weren't like flying saucers. I mean, they were just like balls of light.
Mm-hmm.
And to my knowledge, from my experience, those balls of light exist in the universe as essentially energy or spirit energy. And I think that they also exist here in a variety of forms. So I think that some of it is just natural phenomenon. Some of it is man-made.
Man-made orbs?
Man-made orbs.
How can you make an orb, you think?
Well, you just make a sphere, round sphere, metallic. I don't know how they would propel themselves. There must be some form of propulsion.
You know, I've always thought that magnets might have something to do with it. You know how you take two positive ends, it's like a negative and a negative, and they kind of
they push away from each other.
I want to say that technology somehow.
It's called magnetic levitation.
Yeah.
Or maglev, and there are actually trains that operate on that principle of magnetic levitation.
Oh, so it's nothing that I just came up with myself?
I don't think you just invented it, no.
Oh, yeah.
And there are vehicles that, we actually have vehicles that operate that way on magnetic levitation. So, and that technology is beginning to grow. That technology is growing by leaps and bounds, actually,
mm-hmm.
In today's world. And I think that it won't be long before we see magnetic levitation vehicles, and maybe even magnetic levitation vehicles that are driverless.
How could we apply this to space?
Good question. Do magnets work in space?
Have we tried?
I don't know. They should, because has nothing to do with atmosphere or gravity. Well, it does actually have to do with gravity. With maglev, you know, the gravity is trying to pull it down and the magnetic repulsion is pushing it back up.
But how about if alien technology somehow uses the Earth's gravitation or gravitational pull, like uses the Earth's core as a magnet, and then they have the other part in their vehicle that makes them able to go as fast as they want and not seem to use an energy source that's been visible to the naked eye with the sightings?
There's certainly been, I think that science has talked about different forms of propulsion that are based on light, on magnetism, on electron flow. So basically, the same way that electrons move through a wire and create electricity,
mm-hmm.
that flows through a lamp or a computer or any kind of electric device, that they can create a craft, a spacecraft, essentially, that is just like an electrical particle and that can move through space in the same way. There's a lot of really, really advanced, interesting technology out there, but we haven't found a way to make it profitable, for one, and to make it usable in a way that we can take advantage of that technology, you know, on a full-scale basis. It's mostly stuff that's happened in laboratories, but then they've not been able to duplicate it for use in space travel or whatever. They do have some different propulsion systems that are based on, I believe, on solar power, that use solar reflections to gather energy to drive propulsion engines. So that's another thing that you know comes up that's unique and different and may look strange to people.
Strange
and weird.
More weirdness. Sasquatch sightings.
Where's Sasquatch?
All over the place. They are all over the place. Okay, here we are. Here's a Class B, June of this year, rental cabin. And Thurston County, they were around here looking for places to move. They're from California, and they rented a cabin near the Nisqually Indian Reservation. They decided to take a kayak out. They were on the lake about an hour. Dead quiet. Which happens quite a bit when in relation to Sasquatch sightings. Except the occasional bird or splash from a fish in the lake, when we heard a loud, mournful yell that echoed all around us, my wife froze and looked at me. What the hell was that? I was trying to make sense of it. It didn't sound like a howl of a dog. It sounded more human, like a mid to upper range of a bass singer holding a long, mournful note, but more guttural at the end, and loud, very loud. Like I said, echoed all around us. It was impossible to get a fix on the location. I told my wife I really didn't know. She said it was time to go back. We returned to the cabin. When we got back to the cabin, instead of going inside, I turned on my phone, hoping to catch it on video. I'd let the camera go for a minute and then stop and then record another minute. I hit pay dirt on the third try. The recording's a little thrown off by the cabin inhabitant next to us trying to start a jet ski or boat. Here is the audio. Okay, so you hear the birds, right? Then you hear the jet ski. At first, I thought the jet ski was what was the alleged Sasquatch. But right. You hear the jet ski start, and then you hear in the background that moan. You want me to play it again?
Yeah, play it again. Let's hear that one more time.
Hear them. It's really loud now.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear that. That doesn't sound like a mechanical thing making that noise. It doesn't sound like a siren, you know, or anything mechanical. It sounds like something living.
Now get this. Scott Taylor, BFRO investigator, know him well, great guy. He is a rocket scientist at Boeing, stand-up guy. Here's some of his follow-up. I interviewed this witness. He and his wife do not live in the local area. While talking to the witness, we were able to determine where he was and where the vocalizations probably originated from. I also discovered that the witness is in law enforcement and can be assumed to be an expert observer. You know, law enforcement, they're trained in observing and noticing and taking note and
being aware of things.
Things that you and I might not normally take into account.
Right.
When something happens. When something happens, they have to be able to report on it, right?
Right.
Difficult to say exactly which direction the vocalizations came from due to the terrain and trees in this location. Sounds can reflect off of the terrain and trees and appear to come from a direction opposite where they actually originated from. His impression was that the sounds came west or came from the west. There's a large tract of forest to the west about 0.3 miles, and also to the east, about the same distance. That Sasquatches live in this area, expected to live in this area. There are many reports. The surrounding countryside in this area, they're common, although elusive. Scott's opinion is that these two witnesses heard a Sasquatch.
I believe it after hearing that. I mean, that's pretty compelling, that sound.
Yeah.
You know, it's clearly not a mechanical sound. At first, I thought maybe it would be like an echo of the jet ski, but then when it went again, it clearly was not an echo of the jet ski. It was clearly something much more than that.
More creepy.
More creepy. More furry.
Hairy, not hairy. Fur. It's hair.
Oh, it's hair. It's hair.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do one more before we got to wrap this bad boy up. October of this year, We were there 8 days. My first 2 days and nights were fine after we started hearing what sounded like a lady moaning or howling across the field. Also, tree knocks in the far tree line across the field. It seemed like it would happen in one spot and then another would respond in another area. The next couple of nights, it seemed to get closer until it sounded like it was in the woods right behind our tent. Very loud knocks, usually two at a time. Also got growled at 4 times from right outside the tent one night, and maybe at the 6th night. We stormed out of the tent with guns and flashlights, didn't see anything, didn't hear anything running away. Also, during the day, after hunting, we came back to find a smaller tree with full fresh root ball placed across the entrance to our campsite. It wasn't dragged there. There was no dirt drag marks anywhere, and we looked around. We couldn't find where it was pulled from. There was also some other big limbs placed there, too. I have pictures of the tree. Keep in mind, there's no other campers or hunters in the whole valley the whole week. The last night we came back to camp, and a large, healthy green pine tree was pushed over in the woods and landed right in the middle of our camp. This was the last straw for us. We couldn't take the stress anymore and needed sleep. We left camp, drove to my family's cabin at Priest Lake, slept there. My buddy left the lantern on in the tent before we left, and when we came back the next morning, the tent was unzipped about 6 to 7 inches, and we had it zipped up tight. I also have pics of this and the bigger tree that was pushed over. That's kind of freaky.
Very, very freaky. That's darn right strange.
I will post the pictures of the tree that was left in the middle of the camp, and he doesn't look, he's holding on to this tree, he's holding it up, but he doesn't look too happy.
Yeah. Well, that's got to be a little scary, you know, come back to your camp and there's a tree down.
And there's nobody around.
And nobody around, and
you're hearing moans. And
yeah, I mean, trees don't usually just fall over for no reason.
No, there's usually, and it's root and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Especially if there wasn't high winds. I mean, it takes pretty high wind to do that.
Yeah. That's Creepasaurus Rex.
It is.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. Thanks for listening. If you want to hear more or hear our past episodes, find us on iTunes, strangeharbor.net. You can find Bill just walking down the street.
Hopefully I'll have my clothes on.
Yeah. Do you ever get that court thing cleared up?
No.
I'm kidding.
Still working on it.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor.